dreaming. Jack floated right up to the giant. I don't know, man, he volunteered. Some dude just swiped your mead and took off that way. I think he said his name was Hrungnir. Jack pointed in the general direction of York, England. I thought that was a pretty good fake-out, but Suttung only frowned.
Nice try, he rumbled. Hrungnir would never dare cross me. You are the thieves, and you have pulled me away from important work. We are about to launch the great ship Naglfar. I can't be flying home every time the alarm goes off.
So Naglfar is close, then? I asked.
Oh, not too far, Suttung admitted. Once you cross into Jotunheim, you follow the coast to the border of Niflheim, and...
He scowled.
Stop trying to trick me! You are thieves, and you must die!
He raised his axe. Wait! I yelled.
Why?
Demanded the giant.
Yeah, why?
Demanded Jack. I hated it when my sword sided with a giant. Jack was ready to fight, but I had bad memories of Hrungnir, the last stone giant we'd faced. He hadn't been an easy slice and dice. Also, he exploded on death. I wanted every advantage I could get against Suttung, including the use of my murder of unhelpful crows, for whom I had not yet thought of a signal.
You claim we're thieves, I said. But how do you get that mead, thief?
Suttung kept his axe suspended over his head, giving us an unfortunate view of his underarm hair in his obsidian armpits.
I am no thief. My parents were slain by two evil dwarves, Fjallar and Gjallar.
Ah, I hate those guys, I said.
Right, Suttung agreed. I would have slaughtered them as payback, but they offered me Kvasir's mead instead. It is mine by right of Wergild.
Oh, that kind of took the wind out of my argument. Still, that mead was created from the blood of Kvasir, a murdered god. It belongs to the gods.
So you would make things right, the giant summed up, by stealing the mead yet again for yourself, and killing my brother's thralls in the process?
I may have mentioned that I don't like giant logic. Maybe, I said. Then, in a stroke of genius, I thought of a signal for my avian allies.
Eat crow!
Sadly, the crows were slow to recognize my brilliance. Suttung yelled,
Die!
Jack tried to intercept the axe, but it had gravity, momentum, and the force of a giant behind it. Jack did not. I dove aside as the axe split the field where I'd been standing. Meanwhile, the crows had a leisurely conversation.
Why did he say, eat crow? One cawed. It's an idiomatic expression, another explained. It means to admit you were wrong. Yes, but why did he say it?
Asked a third.
Roar!
Suttung yanked his axe from the ground. Jack flew into my hand.
We can take him together, senor!
I really hoped those were not going to be the last words I ever heard.
Crows, one of the crows said. Hey, wait a minute. We're crows. I bet that was the signal.
Yes, I yelped. Get him!
Okay, Jack yelled happily.
We will!
Suttung raised his axe over his head once more. Jack pulled me into battle as the murder of crows rose from their tree and swarmed Suttung's face, pecking at his eyes and nose and Frosted Flake's beard. The giant roared, stumbling and blind.
Ha ha! Jack yelled. We have you now!
He yanked me forward. Together, we plunged Jack into the giant's left foot. Suttung howled. His axe slipped from his hands, the heavy blade impaling itself in the skull of its owner. And that, kids, is why you should never use a battle axe without wearing your safety helmet. The giant fell with a thunderous thud right on top of the pile of thralls. The crows settled on the grass around me.
That wasn't very chivalrous, one remarked. But you're a Viking, so I guess chivalry doesn't apply.
You're right, Godfrey,
another agreed.
Chivalry was more of a late medieval concept.
A third crow cawed.
You're both forgetting about the Normans.
Bill, just stop, said Godfrey.
No one cares about your doctoral thesis on the Norman invasion.
Shiny things? Asked the second crow.
We get shiny things now?
The entire murder peered at me with beady, greedy black eyes. I only had one shiny thing. Jack, who was presently doing his victory dance around the giant's corpse, singing,
Who killed a giant? I killed a giant! Who's a giant killer? I'm a giant killer!
As tempting as it was to leave him with the crows, I thought I might need my sword the next time a giant had to be stabbed in the foot. Then I glanced at the pile of dead thralls. Right over there, I told the crows. 9 extremely shiny scythe blades. Will those do?
Said Bill. I'm not sure where we'd put them.
We could rent a storage unit, suggested Godfrey.
Good idea, said Bill.
Very well, dead mortal boy. It was nice doing business with you.
Just be careful, I warned. Those blades are sharp.
Oh, don't worry about us, squawked Godfrey. You've got the most dangerous path ahead of you. You'll only find one friendly port between here and the Ship of the Dead, if you can even call the Fortress of Skadi friendly.
I shivered, remembering what Niort had told me about his estranged wife.
It's a wretched place, Bill cawed. Cold, cold, cold. And no shiny things, like, at all. Now, if you'll excuse us, we have to start picking our way through all this carrion to get at those shiny blades.
I love our job, said Godfrey.
Agreed, squawked the other crows.
They fluttered over to the pile of bodies and went to work, which was not something I wanted to watch. Before the murder could murder themselves on the scythe blades and blame me for it, Jack and I began our long hike back to the Big Banana.
Chapter 36 The Ballad of Halfborn, Hovel Hero. Our crew had taken care of the other giant. I could tell because of the badly hacked up, decapitated giant body sprawling on the beach next to our dock. His head was nowhere to be seen. A few fishermen made their way around the corpse, holding their noses. Maybe they thought the giant was a dead whale. Samira stood grinning on the dock.
Welcome back, Magnus. We were getting worried.
I tried to match her smile.
Nah, I'm fine.
I explained what had happened with the crows and Suttung. The hike to the ship had actually been pleasant. Just me and Jack enjoying the meadows and rural backroads of Norway. Along the way, goats and birds had made critical comments about my personal hygiene. But I couldn't blame them. I looked like I'd trekked through half the country and rolled down the other half.
Kid!
Blitzen came running down the gangplank. Hearthstone right behind him.
I'm glad you're okay. Oh, yikes.
Blitz stepped back hastily.
You smell like that dumpster on Park Street.
Thanks, I said. That's the smell I was going for. I couldn't tell much about Blitz's condition since he wore his anti-sun netting, but he sounded cheerful enough. Hearthstone looked much better, like a solid day of sleep had taken the edge off our experiences in Alfheim. The pink and green scarf from Alex looped jauntily across his black leather lapels. "Stone was useful?" he signed. I thought about the pile of dead bodies we'd left in the valley. "We got the mead," I signed. "Couldn't have done it without the whetstone." Harth nodded, apparently satisfied. "You do smell, though."
"So I've been told."
I gestured at the corpse of the giant.
"What happened here?"
"That," Sam said, her eyes twinkling, "was all Halfborn Gunderson."
She yelled toward the deck of the ship.
"Halfborn?"
The berserker was having a heated conversation with TJ, Alex, and Mallory. He looked relieved to come to the railing.
"Ah, there he is," Halfborn said. "Magnus, would you please explain to TJ that those thralls had to die? He's giving Mac a hard time about it."
Three things struck me about this. The nickname Mac had been officially adopted. Halfborn was defending Mallory Keene. And, oh right, it figured that TJ, being the son of a freed slave, might have a wee bit of a problem with us slaughtering 9 thralls.
"They were slaves," TJ said, his voice heavy with anger. "I get what happened, I get the reasoning, but still, you guys killed them. You can't expect me to be okay with that."
"They were Jotuns," Halfborn said. "They weren't even human."
Blitz cleared his throat.
"A gentle reminder, Berserker. Harth and I aren't human either."
"Ah, you know what I mean. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Mac did the right thing."
"Don't defend me," Mallory snapped. "That makes it so much worse."
She faced Thomas Jefferson Jr.
"I'm sorry it had to happen that way, TJ. I really am. It was a bloody mess."
TJ hesitated. Mallory so rarely apologized that when she did, it carried a lot of force. TJ gave her a grudging nod. Not like everything was okay, but like he would at least consider her words. He glared at Halfborn, but Mallory put her hand on the infantryman's shoulder. I remembered what Sam had said about TJ and Halfborn once being enemies. Now I could see just how much they needed Mallory to keep them on the same team.
"I'm going below."
TJ glanced over at the corpse of the giant. "The air is fresher down there." He marched off. Alex puffed out her cheeks.
"Honestly, I don't see that you guys had much choice. But you'll have to give TJ some processing time. He was already pretty miffed since we spent our morning searching Flom and found nothing but tourists and troll souvenirs."
Blitzen grunted.
"At least we have the mead now, so this wasn't all for nothing."
I hoped he was right. Whether I could defeat Loki in a flighting, that remained to be seen. And I had the feeling that no matter how magical the mead was, my success would depend on me. Alas, me was my least favorite person to depend on.
"But what about this giant?" I asked, anxious to change the subject. "He's Boggy, right? How did you kill him?"
Everybody looked at Halfborn.
"Oh, come on," Halfborn protested. "You guys helped a lot."
Hearthstone signed. Blitz and I slept through it.
"TJ and I tried to fight him," Alex admitted, "but Boggy dropped a building on us."
She pointed down the shoreline. I hadn't noticed it before, but one of the lovely blue cottages of Flom had been scooped up from its spot on Main Street, which now had a gaping hole like a missing tooth, and slammed onto the beach, where the cottage had collapsed like a deflated bouncy house. What the locals made of this, I had no idea, but nobody seemed to be running around town in a panic.
"By the time I got back to the ship," Sam said, "the giant was only 30 seconds behind me,
I had just enough energy left to explain what was happening. Halfborn took it from there.
The berserker glowered.
It wasn't so much.
Not so much? Sam turned to me. Boggy landed in the middle of town, turned into giant form, and started stomping around and yelling threats.
He called Flom a dirty hovel, Halfborn grumbled. Nobody says that about my hometown.
Halfborn charged him, Sam continued. Boggy was like 40 feet tall.
45, Alex corrected.
And he had this glamour cast over him, so he looked extra terrifying.
Like Godzilla, Alex considered. Or maybe my dad. I have trouble telling them apart.
But Halfborn just charged right in, Sam continued, yelling, "For Flom!"
Not the best war cry, Gunderson admitted. Luckily for me, the giant wasn't as strong as he looked.
Alex snorted. He was plenty strong. You just went, well, berserk.
Alex cupped her hand like she was telling me a secret.
This guy is scary when he goes into full berserker mode. He literally hacked the giant's feet out from under him. Then, when Boggy fell to his knees, Halfborn went to work on the rest of him.
Gunderson harumphed.
Aw, now, Fiero, you wired off his head. It went flying.
He gestured into the fjord.
Somewhere out there.
Boggy was almost dead by that point, Alex insisted. He was in the process of falling over. That's the only reason the head flew so far.
Well, Halfborn said, he's dead. That's all that matters.
Mallory spat over the side of the boat.
And I missed the whole thing, because I was stuck inside the walnut.
Yes,
Halfborn muttered.
Yes, you did.
Was it my imagination? Or did Halfborn sound disappointed that Mallory had missed his moment of glory?
Once you're in the walnut, Mallory said, you can't get out until somebody lets you out. Sam didn't remember I was in there for like 20 minutes.
Oh, come on, Sam said. It was more like 5.
Felt longer.
Halfborn nodded.
I imagine time goes slower when you're inside a nut.
Shut up, oaf,
Mallory growled.
Halfborn grinned.
So are we making sail or what? Time's a-wasting!
The temperature dropped as we sailed into the sunset. Amidships, Sam did her evening prayer. Hearthstone and Blitzen sat at the prow, gazing in quiet awe at the fjord walls. Mallory went below to check on TJ and cook up some dinner. I stood at the rudder next to Halfborn Gunderson, listening to the sail ripple in the wind and the magical oars swish through the water in perfect time.
I'm fine, Halfborn said.
I glanced over. His face was blue in the evening shadows, like he'd painted it for combat, as he sometimes did.
You were going to ask if I was okay, he said. That's why you're standing here, right? I'm fine.
Ah, good.
I'll admit it was strange walking through the streets of Flom, thinking about how I grew up there in a little hut with just my mom. Prettier place than I remembered. And I may have wondered what would have happened if I'd stayed there, gotten married, had a life.
Right.
And when Boggy insulted the place, I lost it. I wasn't expecting to have any, you know, feelings about being home.
Sure.
It's not like I expect anybody to write a ballad about me saving my hometown.
He tilted his head as if he could almost hear the melody.
I'm glad to be out of that place again. I don't regret my choices when I was alive, even if I did leave my mom behind and never saw her again.
Okay. And Mallory meeting her own mother, that didn't raise any particular emotions in me. I'm just glad Mac found out the truth, even if she did run off on a wild train ride without telling us, and could have gotten herself killed, and I never would have known what happened to her. Oh, and you and Sam, too, of course.
Of course. Halfborn hit the rudder handle.
But curse that vixen! What was she thinking? The daughter of Frigg?
Halfborn's laugh sounded a little hysterical.
No wonder she's so...
He waved his hand, making signs that could have meant almost anything. Exasperating? Fantastic? Angry? Food processor? I said. Halfborn patted my shoulder.
Thanks, Magnus. I'm glad we had this talk. You're all right, for a healer.
Appreciate it.
Take the rudder, will you? Just stay in the middle of the fjord and watch out for krakens.
Krakens? I protested. Halfborn nodded absently and went below, maybe to check on dinner, or Mallory and TJ, or simply because I smelled bad. By full dark, we'd reached the open sea. I didn't crash the ship or release any krakens, which was good. I did not want to be that guy. Samira came aft and took over rudder duty from me. She was chewing her med-jewel dates with her usual expression of post-fast ecstasy.
How are you holding up?
I shrugged. Considering the kind of day we've had? Good, I guess. She raised her canteen and sloshed around Kvasir's mead.
You want to take charge of this? Smell it or sip it or something, just to test it?
The idea made me nauseous. Keep it for now, please. I'll wait until I absolutely have to drink it.
Sensible.
The effect might not be permanent. It's not just that, I said. I'm afraid I'll drink it and it won't be enough. That I still won't be able to beat Loki. Sam looked like she wanted to give me a hug, though hugging a boy wasn't something a good Muslima would ever do.
I wonder the same thing, Magnus. Not about you, but about me. Who knows if I'll have the strength to face my father again? Who knows if any of us will?
Is that supposed to boost my morale? Sam laughed.
All we can do is try, Magnus. I choose to believe that our hardships make us stronger. Everything we've been through on this voyage, it matters. It increases our chances of victory.
I glanced toward the prow. Blitzen and Hearthstone had fallen asleep side by side in their sleeping bags at the base of the dragon figurehead. It seemed a strange place to sleep, given our adventure in Alfheim, but they both seemed at peace. I hope you're right, Sam, I said, because some of it's been pretty rough. Sam sighed, as if letting go of all the hunger, thirst, and curse words she'd kept inside while fasting.
I know. I think the hardest thing we can ever do is see someone for who they really are. Our parents, our friends, ourselves.
I wondered if she was thinking about Loki, or maybe herself. She could have been talking about any of us on the ship. None of us were free of our pasts. During the voyage, we'd looked into some pretty harsh mirrors. My moment at the mirror was yet to come. When I faced Loki, I was sure he'd delight in magnifying my every fault, stripping bare my every fear and weakness. If he could, he would reduce me to a sniveling grease spot. We had until tomorrow to reach Naglfar, Frigg had said, or the next day at the latest. I found myself wavering, almost wishing we would miss the deadline so I wouldn't have to face Loki one-on-one. But no. My friends were counting on me. For the sake of everybody I knew, everybody I didn't know, I had to delay Ragnarok as long as possible. I had to give Sam and Amir a chance at a normal life. And Annabeth and Percy.
and Percy's baby sister Estelle. They all deserved better than planetary destruction. I said goodnight to Sam, then spread my own sleeping bag out on the deck. I slept fitfully, dreaming of dragons and thralls, of falling down mountains and battling clay giants. Loki's laughter echoed in my ears. Over and over, the deck turned to a gruesome patchwork of dead men's keratin, enfolding me in a disgusting toenail cocoon. "Good morning," Blitzen said, jolting me awake. The morning was bitter cold and steel gray. I sat up, breaking a sheet of ice that had formed on my sleeping bag. Off our starboard side, snow-capped mountains loomed even taller than the fjords of Norway. All around us, the sea was a broken-up puzzle of ice blocks. The deck was completely glazed in frost, turning our bright yellow warship the color of weak lemonade. Blitzen was the only other person on deck. He was bundled up, but he wasn't wearing any sun protection, despite the fact that it was clearly daytime. That could only mean one thing. "We're not in Midgard anymore," I guessed. Blitzen smiled wearily, no humor in his eyes. "We've been in Jotunheim for hours now, kid. The others are below, trying to stay warm. You, well, being the son of the summer god, you're more resistant to cold. But even you are going to start having trouble soon. Judging from how fast the temperature is dropping, we're getting close to the borders of Niflheim." I shivered instinctively. Niflheim, the primordial realm of ice, one of the few worlds I hadn't yet visited, and one I wasn't anxious to explore. "How will we know when we're there?" I asked. The ship lurched with a juddering noise that loosened my joints. I staggered to my feet. The big banana was dead in the water. The surface of the sea had turned to solid ice in every direction.
"I'd say we're here,"
Blitz sighed.
"Let's hope Hearthstone can summon some magical fire. Otherwise, we're all going to freeze to death within the hour."
Chapter 37 Alex Bites My Face Off. I have died many painful deaths. I've been impaled, decapitated, burned, drowned, crushed, and thrown off the terrace of floor 103. I prefer all of those to hypothermia. After only a few minutes, my lungs felt like I was breathing glass dust. We got all hands on deck, another nautical term I finally understood, to deal with the ice problem, but we had little success. I sent Jack out to break up the floe in front of us, while Halfborn and TJ used pole axes to chip away at the port and starboard sides. Sam flew ahead with a rope and tried to tug us along. Alex turned into a walrus and pushed from behind. I was too cold to make any jokes about how nice she looked with tusks, whiskers, and flippers. Hearthstone summoned a new rune, Kenots. He explained this was Kenots, the torch, the fire of life. Instead of disappearing in a flash, like most runes did, Kenots continued to burn above the foredeck, a floating bend of fire 5 feet high, melting the frost on the deck and rigging. Kenots kept us warm enough to avoid instant death, but Blitz fretted that sustaining the rune for an extended period would also burn up Hearth's energy. A few months ago, expending so much energy would have killed him. Now he was stronger. Still, I worried too. I found a pair of binoculars in the supplies and scanned the mountains for any promise of shelter or harbor. I saw nothing but sheer rock. I didn't realize my fingers were turning blue until Blitz pointed it out. I summoned a little fray warmth into my hands, but the effort made me dizzy. Using the power of summer here was like
trying to remember everything that had happened on my first day of elementary school. I knew summer still existed, somewhere, but it was so distant, so vague, I could barely conjure a memory of it. But, Blitz, you don't look affected, I noted. He scratched the ice from his beard.
Dwarves do well in the cold. You and I will be the last ones to freeze to death. But that's not much comfort.
Mallory, Blitz, and I tried using oars to push away the ice as Halfborn and TJ broke it up. We alternated duties, going below decks two or three at a time to warm up, though below wasn't much warmer. We would have made faster time just getting out and walking, but Walrus Alex reported that the ice had some nasty thin spots. Also, we had nowhere to shelter. At least the ship offered supplies and some cover from the wind. My arms started to go numb. I got so used to shivering, I couldn't tell whether it had started to snow or whether my vision was blurred. The fiery rune was the only thing keeping us alive, but its light and heat slowly faded. Hearthstone sat cross-legged beneath the kenauts, his eyes closed in intense concentration. Beads of sweat dripped from his brow and froze as soon as they splattered on the deck. After a while, even Jack started to act glum. He no longer seemed interested in serenading us or joking about doing icebreaker activities.
"And this is the nicest part of Niflheim," Jack grumbled. "You should see the cold regions."
I'm not sure how much time passed. It seemed impossible that there had been any life before this one. Breaking ice, pushing ice, shivering, dying. Then, at the prow, Mallory croaked,
"Hey, look!"
In front of us, the swirling snow thinned. Only a few hundred yards ahead, jutting from the main line of cliffs, was a jagged peninsula like the blade of a corroded axe. A thin line of black gravel beach hugged the base, and toward the top of the cliff, were those fires flickering? We turned the ship in that direction, but we didn't make it far. The ice thickened, cementing our hull in place. Above Hearth's head, the Kenauts rune guttered weakly. We all gathered on the deck, solemn and silent. Every blanket and extra piece of clothing in the hold had been wrapped around us.
Walk for it, Blitz suggested.
Even he was starting to stutter.
We pair up for warmth. Get across the ice to the shore. Maybe we find shelter.
It wasn't so much a survival plan as a plan for dying in a different place. But we grimly went to work. We shouldered all the supplies we couldn't live without. Some food, water, the canteen of Kvasir's mead, our weapons. Then we climbed onto the ice, and I folded the big banana into a handkerchief, because dragging the ship along behind us would have been, well, a drag. Jack volunteered to float in front of us and test the ice with his blade. I wasn't sure whether that would make things more or less dangerous for us, but he refused to go back into pendant form, because the after effects of his extra exertion would have killed me. He's thoughtful that way. As we paired up, somebody's arm curled around my waist. Alex Fierro wedged herself next to me, wrapping a blanket around our heads and shoulders. I looked at her in amazement. A pink wool scarf covered her head and mouth, so all I could see were her two-toned eyes and some wisps of green hair.
Shut up, she stammered. You're warm and summery.
Jack led the way across the ice. Behind him, Blitzen did his best to prop up Hearthstone, who stumbled along with the rune of Kenauts above him, though its heat was now more like a candle's than a bonfire's. Sam and Mallory followed, then TJ and Halfborn, and finally Alex and me.
We trudged across the frozen sea, making our way toward that outcropping of rock. But our destination seemed to get farther away with every step. Could the cliff be a mirage? Maybe distance was fluid on the borders of Niflheim and Jotunheim. Once, in the hall of Utgard Loki, Alex and I had rolled a bowling ball all the way to the White Mountains in New Hampshire. So I supposed anything was possible. I couldn't feel my face anymore. My feet had turned to 1 gallon boxes of squishy ice cream. I thought how sad it would be to come as far as we had, facing so many gods, giants, and monsters, only to keel over and freeze to death in the middle of nowhere. I clung to Alex. She clung to me. Her breath rattled. I wished she still had her walrus blubber, because she was all skin and bone, as wiry as her garrote. I wanted to chide her. Eat, eat! You're wasting away! I appreciated her warmth, though. Under any other circumstances, she would have killed me for getting this close. Also, I would have freaked out from so much physical contact. I considered it a personal triumph that I'd learned to hug my friends once in a while. But I wasn't usually good with closeness. The need for warmth, and maybe the fact that this was Alex, made it okay somehow. I concentrated on her scent, a sort of citrusy fragrance that made me think of orange groves in a sunny valley in Mexico. Not that I'd ever been to a place like that, but it smelled nice.
Guava juice.
Alex croaked.
What?
I asked.
Roof deck. Back. Bay. That was nice.
She's clinging to good memories, I realized. Trying to stay alive.
Yeah,
I agreed.
York,
she said.
Mr. Chippy, you didn't know what takeaway meant.
I hate you, I said.
Keep talking.
Her laugh sounded more like a smoker's cough.
When you returned from Alfheim, the look on your face when I took back my pink glasses.
But you were glad to see me?
Yeah, you have some entertainment value.
Struggling to walk on the ice, our heads so close together, I could almost imagine Alex and I were a clay warrior with two faces, a twin being. The thought was comforting. Maybe 50 yards from the cliff, the Kenot's rune sputtered out. Hearth stumbled against Blitz. The temperature plummeted further, which I didn't think was possible. My lungs expelled their last bit of warmth. They screamed when I tried to inhale.
Keep going!
Blitz yelled back to us hoarsely.
I am not dying in this outfit!
We obliged, marching step by step toward the narrow gravel beach, where at least we could die on solid ground. Blitz and Hearth were almost to the shore when Alex stopped abruptly. I didn't have any energy left either, but I thought I should try to sound encouraging.
We have to keep going.
I looked over. We were nose to nose under the blankets. Her eyes glinted, amber and brown. Her scarf had dipped below her chin. Her breath was like limes. Then, before I even knew what was happening, she kissed me. She could have bitten off my mouth and I would have been less surprised. Her lips were cracked and rough from the cold. Her nose fit perfectly next to mine. Our faces aligned, our breath mixed. Then she pulled away.
I wasn't going to die without doing that, she said.
The world of primordial ice must not have frozen me completely, because my chest burned like a coal furnace.
Well, she frowned. Stop gaping and let's move.
We trudged toward the shore. My mind wasn't working properly. I wondered if Alex had kissed me just to inspire me to keep going, or to distract me from our imminent deaths. It didn't seem possible that she'd actually wanted to kiss me. Whatever the case, that kiss was the only reason I made it to shore. Our friends were already there, huddled against the rocks. They hadn't seemed to notice the kiss between Alex and me. Why would they? Everyone was too busy freezing to death.
I have gunpowder, TJ stuttered. Could make a fire?
Unfortunately, we had nothing to burn except our clothes, and we needed those. Blitz looked miserably at the cliff face, which was sheer and unforgiving.
I'll try to shape the rock, he said. Maybe I can dig us a cave.
I'd seen Blitz mold solid rock before, but it took a lot of energy and concentration. Even then, he'd only been making simple handholds. I didn't see how we'd have the strength to dig an entire cave. Nor was that going to save us. But I appreciated his stubborn optimism. He'd just dug his fingers into the stone when the entire cliff rumbled. A line of blazing light etched the shape of a door, 20 feet square, that swung inward with a deep grinding noise. In the opening stood a giantess as terrible and beautiful as the Niflheim landscape. She was 10 feet tall, dressed in white and gray furs, her brown eyes cold and angry, her dark hair braided in multiple strands like a cat-o'-nine-tails whip.
"Who dares rock-shape my front door?"
she asked.
Blitz gulped.
Why should I not kill you all?
The giantess demanded.
Or perhaps, since you look half-dead already, I'll just close my door and let you freeze.
Wait, I croaked. Skadi. You're Skadi, right?
Gods of Asgard, I thought. Please let this be Skadi, and not some random giantess named Gertrude the Unfriendly.
I'm Magnus Chase, I continued. Niord is my grandfather. He sent me to find you.
A variety of emotions rippled across Skadi's face. Irritation, resentment, and maybe just a hint of curiosity.
All right, frozen boy, she growled. That gets you in the door. Once you've all thawed out and explained yourselves, I'll decide whether or not to use you for archery targets.
Chapter 38 Skadi knows all, shoots all. I didn't want to let go of Alex. Or maybe I just physically couldn't. Two of Skadi's Jotun servants literally had to pull us apart. One of them carried me up a winding set of stairs into the fortress, my body still hunched in hobbling old man position. Compared to outside, Skadi's hall felt like a sauna, though the thermostat probably wasn't set much higher than freezing. I was carried through high stone corridors with vaulted ceilings that reminded me of the big old churches in Back Bay, great places to warm up in when you're homeless in winter. Occasionally, a booming sound echoed through the fortress, like someone was shooting cannons in the distance. Skadi barked orders to her servants, and we were all taken to separate rooms to get cleaned up. A Jotun manservant, giant servant, lowered me into a bath so hot, I hit a high note I hadn't been able to sing since fourth grade. While I soaked, he gave me something to drink. A vile herbal concoction that burned my throat,
and made my fingers and toes spasm. He hauled me out of the bath, and by the time he got me dressed in a white wool tunic and breeches, I had to admit I felt almost okay again, even with Jack now hanging back on my neck chain as a runestone. The color of my toes and fingers had returned to pink. I could feel my face. My nose had not fallen off from frostbite, and my lips were right where Alex had left them.
"You'll live," the Yotun grumbled, like this was a personal failure on his part.
He gave me comfortable fur shoes and a thick, warm cloak, then led me out to the main hall, where my friends were waiting. The hall was standard Viking for the most part. A rough-hewn stone floor covered with straw, a ceiling made from spears and shields, three tables in a U-shape around a central fire, though Skadi's flames burned white and blue and seemed to give off no heat. Along one side of the hall, a row of cathedral-sized windows opened onto a blizzard-blurred vista. I saw no glass on the windows, but the wind and snow didn't trespass inside. At the center table, Skadi sat on a throne carved from yew wood and overlain with furs. Her servants bustled around, putting out platters of fresh bread and roasted meat, along with steaming mugs that smelled like hot chocolate? Suddenly, I liked Skadi a lot more. My friends were all dressed like me, in white wool, so we looked like a secret society of very clean monks, the Fellowship of the Bleach. I'll admit, I scanned for Alex first, hoping to sit next to her, but she was on the far bench, wedged between Mallory and Halfborn, with TJ at the end. Alex caught me. She mimicked my gawping face like, "What are you looking at?" So it was back to normal then. One life and death kiss, and we returned to our regularly scheduled snark. Great. I sat next to Blitzen, Hearthstone, and Sam, which was just fine. We all dug into our dinner, except for Sam. She hadn't bathed, since that was also against Ramadan rules, but she'd changed clothes. Her hijab had shifted color to match her white outfit. Somehow, she managed not to stare longingly at everyone else's food, which convinced me beyond a doubt that she had superhuman endurance. Skadi lounged on her throne, her cat-o'-nine tails hair draped over her shoulders, her fur cloak making her look even larger than she was. She spun an arrow on top of her knee. Behind her, the wall was lined with racks of equipment. Skis, bows, quivers of arrows. I guessed she was a fan of cross-country archery.
"Welcome, travelers," said our host. "To Thrymheimir. In your language, Thunderhome."
As if on cue, a rumble shook the room. The same boom I'd heard when deeper in the fortress. Now I knew what it was. Snow thunder. You heard it in Boston sometimes when a snowstorm mixed with a thunderstorm. It sounded like firecrackers going off inside a cotton pillow, if you magnified that sound by a million.
"Thunderhome," Halfborn nodded gravely. "A good name, considering, you know, the constant..."
Thunder boomed again, rattling the plates on the table. Mallory leaned over to Alex.
"I can't reach Gunderson. Hit him for me, will you?"
Despite the huge size of the hall, the acoustics were perfect. I could hear every whisper. I wondered if Skadi had designed the place with that in mind. The giantess wasn't eating from the plate in front of her. Best case scenario, she was fasting for Ramadan. Worst-case scenario, she was waiting until we were sufficiently fattened up so she could enjoy us as her main course. She tapped her arrow on her knee while studying me intently.
"So, you're one of Njord's, eh?" she mused. "Child of Frey, I suppose."
Yes, ma'am. I wasn't sure if lady or miss or huge scary person was the appropriate title, but Scotty didn't kill me, so I figured I hadn't offended her. Yet.
I can see the resemblance.
She wrinkled her nose, as if the similarity was not a point in my favor.
Niord wasn't the worst husband. He was kind. He had beautiful feet.
Outstanding feet, Blitz agreed, wagging a pork rib for emphasis.
But we just couldn't get along, Scotty continued. Irreconcilable differences. He didn't like my hall. Can you believe it?
Hearthstone signed. You have a beautiful hall. The gesture for beautiful was circling your hand in front of your face, then spreading your fingertips apart like poof. The first few times I saw it, I thought Hearth was saying, this thing makes my face explode.
Thank you, elf, said Scotty,
because all the best Jotuns understand ASL.
Certainly, Thunderhome is better than Niord's seaside palace. All those gulls constantly screeching. I couldn't stand the noise.
Snow thunder shook the room again. Yes, Alex said. No peace and quiet. Like here.
Exactly, said Scotty. My father built this fortress. May his soul rest with Ymir, the first giant. Now Thrymheimir is mine, and I don't intend to leave it. I've had my fill of the Aesir.
She leaned forward, still holding that wicked barbed arrow.
Now tell me, Magnus Chase, why did Niord send you to me? Please tell me he doesn't still harbor illusions about us getting back together.
Why me? I thought. Skadi seemed okay. I'd met enough giants to know they weren't all bad, any more than all gods were good. But if Skadi was done with the Aesir, I wasn't sure she'd welcome us going after Loki, who was, of course, the Aesir's main enemy. I definitely didn't want to tell her that my grandfather, the god of seaside pedicures, still pined for her. On the other hand, some gut instinct told me Skadi would see through any lies or omissions as easily as she heard every whisper in this hall. Thrymheimir was not a place for hiding secrets.
Niord wanted me to see how you felt about him, I admitted.
She sighed.
I don't believe this. He didn't send you with flowers, did he? I told him to stop it with the bouquets.
No flowers, I promised, suddenly sympathizing with all the innocent Niflheim delivery persons she had probably shot dead. And Niord's feelings aren't the main reason we're here. We've come to stop Loki. The servants all stopped what they were doing. They glanced at me, then at their mistress, as if thinking, well, this should be interesting. My friends watched me with expressions that ranged from, you got this, Blitzen, to, please don't screw up as much as usual, Alex. Scotty's dark eyes glittered.
Go on.
Loki is getting his ship Naglfar ready to sail, I said. We're here to stop him, recapture him, and bring him back to the Aesir so we don't have to fight Ragnarok, like, tomorrow. Another peal of thunder shook the mountain. The giantess's face was impossible to read. I imagined her sending her arrow across the room and embedding it in my chest like a mistletoe dart. Instead, she threw back her head and laughed.
Is that why you're carrying Kvasir's mead? You intend to challenge Loki to a flighting?
I gulped. Yeah. How do you know we have Kvasir's mead? My second unspoken question was,
And are you going to take it away from us? The giantess leaned forward.
I am fully aware of everything that happens in my hall, Magnus Chase, and everyone who passes through it. I have taken inventory of your weapons, your supplies, your powers, your scars.
She scanned the room, her eyes resting on each of us. Not with sympathy, more like she was picking targets.
I also would have known if you'd lied to me. Be glad you did not. So, tell me, why should I let you continue your quest? Persuade me not to kill you.
Halfborn Gunderson wiped his beard.
Well, for one thing, Lady Skadi, killing us would be a lot of trouble. If you know our abilities, you know we're excellent fighters. We'd give you quite a challenge.
An arrow thudded into the table an inch from Halfborn's hand. I didn't even see how it happened. I looked back at Skadi. She suddenly had a bow in her hand, a second arrow already nocked and ready to fly. Halfborn didn't flinch. He set down his hot chocolate and belched.
Lucky shot.
Ha!
Skadi lowered her bow, and my heart started pumping blood again.
So you have bravery. Or foolhardiness, at least. What else can you tell me? That we're no friends of Loki's,
Samira volunteered.
And neither are you.
Skadi raised an eyebrow.
What makes you say so? If you were a friend of Loki's, we would already be dead.
Sam gestured toward the windows.
The harbor of Naglfar is close, isn't it? I can sense my father nearby. You don't like Loki gathering his army right on your doorstep. Let us continue our quest, and we can take my father off the board.
Alex nodded.
Yes, we can.
Interesting, Skadi mused. Two children of Loki sit at my dinner table, and you both seem to hate Loki even more than I do. Ragnarok makes strange allies.
TJ clapped once, so loudly we all flinched, except for Hearth.
I knew it!
He grinned and pointed at Skadi.
I knew this lady had good taste. Hot chocolate this tasty, a hall this awesome, and her servants don't wear thrall collars.
Skadi curled her lip.
No, Enher Yi. I detest the keeping of slaves.
See?
TJ gave Halfborn a told-you-so look. More thunder rattled the plates and cups, as if agreeing with TJ. The berserker just rolled his eyes.
I knew this lady hated Loki, TJ summed up. She's a natural union supporter.
The giantess frowned.
I am not sure what that means, my very enthusiastic guest. But you are right. I am no friend of Loki's. There was a time when he didn't seem so bad. He could make me laugh. He was charming. Then, during the flighting in Aegir's hall, Loki insinuated that he had shared my bed.
Skadi shuddered at the memory.
In front of all the other gods, he slighted my honor. He said horrible things. And so, when the gods bound him in that cave, I was the one who found the serpent and set it over Loki's head.
She smiled coldly.
The Aesir and Vanir were satisfied just to bind him for eternity. But that wasn't enough for me. I wanted him to experience the drip, drip, drip of poison in his face for the rest of time. Just the way his words had made me feel.
I decided I would not be slighting Scotty's honor any time soon.
Well, ma'am,
Blitz tugged at his wool tunic. He was the only one of us who didn't look comfortable in his new threads, probably because the outfit did not allow him to wear an ascot.
Sounds like you gave the villain just what he deserved. Will you help us, then?
Skadi set her bow across the table.
Let me understand this. You, Magnus Chase, plan to defeat Loki, the silver-tongued master of insults, in a verbal duel.
Right. She looked like she was waiting for me to wax poetic about my prowess with verbs and adjectives and whatnot. Honestly, that one-word answer was all I could manage.
Well then, Scotty said, it's a very good thing you have Kvasir's mead.
My friends all nodded. Thanks a lot, friends.
You are also wise not to drink it yet, Scotty continued. You have such a small amount. There is no telling how long its effect will last. You should drink it in the morning, just before you leave. That should allow enough time for the mead to take effect before you face Loki.
Then you know where he is? I asked. He's that close? I wasn't sure whether to be relieved or petrified.
Scotty nodded. Beyond my mountain, there lies a frozen bay where Naglfar sits at its moorings. In giant terms, it is only a few good strides away. What is that in human terms? Asked Mallory. It won't matter,
Scotty assured her.
I will give you skis to speed you on your way.
Hearth signed. Skis?
I'm not so good on skis, Blitz muttered.
Scotty smiled.
Fear not, Blitzen, son of Freya. My skis will look good on you. You will have to reach the ship before midday tomorrow. By then, the ice blocking the bay will be sufficiently melted for Loki to sail into open waters. If that happens, nothing will be able to stop Ragnarok.
I met Mallory's eyes across the hearth fire. Her mom, Frigg, had been right. By the time we set foot on Naglfar, if we reached it, 48 hours would have passed since Flom.
If you manage to board the ship, Scotty said, you will somehow have to make your way through legions of giants and undead. They will, of course, try to kill you. But if you succeed in getting face to face with Loki and issuing your challenge, he will be honor-bound to accept. The fighting will stop long enough for the flighting.
So, Alex said, it'll be cake then. Skadi's cat-o'-nine tails hair slithered across her shoulders as she regarded Alex.
You have an interesting definition of cake. Assuming Magnus somehow defeats Loki in a flighting and weakens him enough to capture, how will you imprison him?
Mallory said.
We have a walnut shell.
Scotty nodded.
That is good. A walnut shell might do it.
So, if I defeat Loki in the flighting, I said, and we do the walnut shell, etc., then we shake hands with Loki's crew, everybody says good game, and they let us go, right?
Scotty snorted. Hardly. The ceasefire will end as soon as the contest is over. Then, one way or another, the crew will kill you.
Well then, Halfborn said, why don't you come with us, Scotty? We could use an archer in our group.
Scotty laughed.
This one amuses me.
Yeah, that feeling wears off quickly, Mallory muttered. The giantess rose.
Tonight you will stay in my hall, little mortals.
You can sleep peacefully, knowing that there is nothing to fear in Thunderhome. But in the morning, she pointed to the white abyss beyond her windows, out you go. The last thing I want is to get Niord's hopes up by pampering his grandson.
Chapter 39. I become as poetic as, like, a poetic person. Despite Scotty's promise, I didn't sleep peacefully. The coldness of the chamber and the constant booming didn't help. Nor did the knowledge that in the morning Scotty was apparently going to fit us with skis and throw us out a window. Also, I kept thinking about Alex Fierro. You know, maybe just a little. Alex was a force of nature, like the snow thunder. She struck when she felt like it, depending on temperature differentials and storm patterns I couldn't possibly predict. She shook my foundations in a way that was powerful, but also weirdly soft and constrained, veiled in blizzard. I couldn't assign any motives to her. She just did what she wanted. At least, that's how it felt to me. I stared at the ceiling for a long time. Finally, I got out of bed, used the wash basin, and changed into new wool clothes, white and gray, the colors of snow and ice. My runestone pendant hung cold and heavy on my neck, like Jack was catching some winks. I gathered my few supplies, then wandered into the corridors of Thunderhome, hoping I didn't get killed by a startled servant or a random arrow. In the great hall, I found Sam at prayer. Jack hummed against my collarbone, informing me in a sleepy, irritated tone that it was 4 in the morning, Niflheim standard time. Sam had faced her prayer rug toward the huge open windows. I guessed the blur of white outside made a good blank screen to stare at while you meditated on God or whatever. I waited until she finished. I'd come to recognize her routine by now. A moment of silence at the end, a sort of peaceful settling that even the thunder couldn't disturb. Then she turned and smiled. "Good morning," she said. "Hey, you're up early." I realized that was a stupid thing to say to a Muslim. If you're observant, you never sleep late, because you have to be up for prayers before first light. Being around Sam, I'd started to pay more attention to the timing of dawn and dusk, even when we were in other worlds. "I didn't sleep much," she said. "I figured I would get in a good meal or two." She patted her stomach. "How do you know prayer times in Jotunheim?" I asked. "Or where Mecca is?"
"Heh. I take my best guess. That's allowed. It's the intention that counts."
I wondered if the same would be true of my coming challenge. Maybe Loki would say, "Well, Magnus, you really sucked at flighting, but you did your best, and it's the intention that counts, so you win."
"Hey,"
Sam's voice jarred me out of my thoughts.
"You'll do fine."
"You're awfully calm," I noted, considering, you know, today's the day. Sam adjusted her hijab, which was still white to match her outfit.
"Last night was the 27th night of Ramadan. Traditionally, that's the night of power."
I waited. "Is that when you get supercharged?" She laughed.
"Sort of. It commemorates when Muhammad received his first revelation from the angel Gabriel. Nobody knows exactly which night it is, but it's the holiest of the year."
"Wait, it's your holiest night, and you don't know when it is?" Sam shrugged.
"Most people go with the 27th, but yeah. It's one of the nights of the last 10 days of Ramadan. Not knowing keeps you on your toes. Anyway, last night it just felt right. I stayed up praying and thinking, and I just felt confirmed. Like there is something bigger than all this.
Loki, Ragnarok, the Ship of the Dead. My dad may have power over me because he's my dad, but he's not the biggest power. Allahu Akbar.
I knew that term, but I'd never heard Sam use it before. I'll admit, it gave me an instinctive jolt in the gut. The news media loved to talk about how terrorists would say that right before they did something horrible and blew people up. I wasn't going to mention that to Sam. I imagined she was painfully aware. She couldn't walk the streets of Boston in her hijab most days without somebody screaming at her to go home. And if she was in a bad mood, she'd scream back, "I'm from Dorchester." "Yeah," I said. "That means God is great, right?" Sam shook her head.
"That's a slightly inaccurate translation,"